Welcome back to Plot Pit, where we forge fiction from fact and folklore. William Atkinson here with
John LeMay.
And today we have very special author Roy Griffiths on the phone, author of The Thing from HR. Hello, Roy. How are you?
I am great, guys. Thanks for having me on. And just a personal note, everybody calls me Griff. I was in the Coast Guard for about 30 seconds before that became my nickname for the rest of my days.
All right, so we have Griff on the phone, author of The Thing from HR. John has got some material for us today in the pit. What have you got?
Well, Griff said he wanted us to surprise him and really throw something odd at him. So, Griff, I hope you like this. Our main focus is going to be Jack the Ripper and London Bridge in Arizona. That's our focus. What do you think of that?
That's awesome.
Jack the Ripper and London Bridges in Arizona. Let's begin the descent. Griff, why don't you give us a little bit of bio for our listeners?
Wow. Let's see. You could look at my life and say I'm either a crashing failure or a serial optimist. I've done all kinds of stuff. Mentioned the Coast Guard. I was 62nd rescue swimmer, aviation rescue swimmer in the Coast Guard, because I was getting my chance to be Errol Flynn for a while. I decided to be a writer when I was 10, and I have always written, no matter what I've been doing, where I'm at. Gosh, I've written screenplays and plays, and I kind of drifted late into novels, and I really dig it. Live in a little town in East Texas, population about 642. You know, I feel like I've moved on from being Errol Flynn to trying to be Robert E. Howard, but I don't think I'm going to make it. Because he actually lived out in this area, which is pretty cool. I just love telling stories. I love the creative act, and I love reading. I love reading good stories too.
Awesome.
So that's me. You've
been a writer for most of your life. Then tell us just a little bit of a teaser for The Thing from HR, which we are going to be talking about more in detail in tomorrow's episode.
The elevator pitch is it's Lovecraft with laughs. Not something I've encountered a lot. It really caught my imagination. And, you know, the tagline on a movie poster would be something like, what's a nice shuggoth like him doing in a dump like this?
You know, I was wondering if you were going to hit on Lovecraft meets Laughcraft.
That's a thought. If you edit that out, I'll steal that.
Oh. But you're more than welcome to have it. So we'll put a pin on that for now. The Thing from HR, Lovecraft meets laughs. And we're going to talk more about that and Griff's writing style and everything in the author interview segment airing tomorrow. For now, John, Jack the Ripper, London Bridges, Arizona. Go.
Yeah, as most of our listeners know, we like to start off with something that's actually real. And we like to get the weird stuff. So I've got two main concepts for us that I think is enough to work the story from, and then I've got two also supporting ideas that maybe we can weave in there if we need. So I'm going to start off with Jack the Ripper. I don't think he needs too much information for our listeners. They know who he is. The short of it is, serial killer in London, late 1880s. He mostly targets prostitutes in the East End. He has surgical precision in the way that he cuts them up in their death, and so they think that he might even be a surgeon. Kind of like the Zodiac Killer, they never caught him. They don't know who he really was, where he went. Okay, element number two is London Bridge. I think it's fascinating that London Bridge, which was built back in the 1830s, by the early 1960s in London, traffic was becoming too much for it, you know, because that's such a heavily populated area. And this rich land developer all the way over in Arizona bought London Bridge and had it transported stone by stone and everything it was constructed from and rebuilt it over, let me look at the name of this community. So it was in 1968 and this guy had created a community in Arizona called Lake Havasu City. And he just basically had London Bridge, as I said, shipped from London and reconstructed. And it was completed in 1971. And supposedly they have ghosts on the bridge that you can see to this day of like English police bobbies and things like that.
Now, this is a real thing?
Yes, this is a real thing.
They actually move London Bridge mm-hmm. to Arizona.
Yes.
All right. I'm instantly thinking Jeff Bezos with his yacht that happened just about a year ago where they built it on the wrong side of the bridge. They were going to tear it down, dismantle the bridge, and then move the yacht and then rebuild the bridge. And the community got all up in an uproar and canceled the project.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So continue more. London Bridge is falling down. No, folks, it's London Bridge is being moved.
Okay, and here is where Jack the Ripper comes in. In 1906, there was a man in Benson, Arizona that claimed he was passing through the town. And as I said, nobody knows what happened to Jack the Ripper. Some people think he went to America to get away. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so this guy, he's passing through Benson, Arizona. He stops in the bar just to have a good time for the night, as many travelers do. There's a shootout involving the bartender, and the bartender gets shot and he dies. It's a very elaborate story. You can find it for yourself. It's from the Federal Writers Project of the 1930s. Story was collected. But the man, he claims that this bartender that was in the gunfight gets shot, and in his dying moments, he confesses that he is Jack the Ripper and that he came to America from England, and he pulls this knife out of his boot and he's like, "This is my treasured knife. I want you to bury it with me." So we've got the element of Jack the Ripper possibly being in Arizona, London Bridge being in Arizona, and then I have our third element that maybe we need, maybe we don't. Preceding Jack the Ripper in London, there was another Jack. Back in the 1830s, he was called Spring-Heeled Jack, and he's kind of a monster. Oh, so, okay, Griff knows who that is. Griff, do you want to do some talking and tell people about Spring-Heeled Jack?
It's been a while since I read it, but yeah, if I've got the story right, he was something of an apparition who didn't harm people exactly the way Jack the Ripper did, but he would just sort of appear, jump out of nowhere, essentially. I believe he had like really big red eyes, and then he would just sort of leap out of sight. Is that the story you got?
I could not have summed it up better myself. That's exactly it.
Now, this is all new material for me.
Yeah, Will, this is all new for Will. But okay, I already know how I would like to stitch this together, and you guys can argue with me or continue it on. So this is my thought. Spring-Heeled Jack is terrorizing London at the same time that London Bridge is being built.
All right.
I don't know how those two things are connected yet, but we'll come up with something. So, but my idea is this. Spring-Heeled Jack, because he's kind of supernatural, he's like a demon or something.
Mm-hmm.
And his Spring-Heeled Jack spirit possesses the man who becomes Jack the Ripper in the 1880s. Jack the Ripper goes to America. Then later, London Bridge, that had something to do with Spring-Heeled Jack, you know, in our fictional story, comes to America in the 1960s. So I'm thinking, you know, that's our tie-in, is the evil spirit of Spring-Heeled Jack into Jack the Ripper, who dies in America, does, let's say, when Jack the Ripper dies, the evil spirit passes on to this guy who becomes a millionaire, some sort of land developer, and this guy, that's why he buys London Bridge, and he needs it. And, like, why is that? I feel like we can make a story out of that, possibly.
Okay, I could see. I was kind of going there in my head, too, a little bit. Kind of the same progression. So Spring-Heeled Jack is some sort of malevolent entity. Maybe it requires sacrifice. So, you know, maybe it's like every 100 years to prolong its existence. So it possesses, in essence, an innocent man to carry out the Jack the Ripper sacrifice. But let's go beyond that. So the sacrifices are completed. I think it was 5 victims that he had.
Yeah, the canonical 5.
Right. I believe, wasn't one of them interrupted, they think, before he could finish doing whatever he was supposed to do? The last one was just ghastly.
Yeah, that's what happened. Was it's rumored that he was interrupted, and as a result of that, he had about 30, 40 minutes later went and did another one. And
yes.
So that's the night of the double murder.
Right, okay. So that would suggest, if we go with my idea, an incomplete ritual. You know, maybe there's a time factor, and the innocent man comes to and goes, "What the hell have I done?" That's when he flees to America. However, where I was going was, what if there's some function, maybe some druid-type stone or something had been used in the construction of the London Bridge? So it was like an anchor to Spring-Heeled Jack, so it couldn't really travel that far. So that allowed first the innocent man to escape, but still haunted by these crimes. He had no idea what he committed. And then the entity is trapped in London Bridge, I guess it anchored, as it were, under London Bridge, like leashed. So then when the bridge is sold and it goes to Arizona, entity has got a fresh hunting ground. Maybe he's got his time frame coming up, you know, where he's got to start looking. And perhaps he goes hunting for descendants of that bartender.
Griff, tying back into your idea of maybe every 100 years, there's this cyclical Jack the Ripper style killing.
Mm-hmm.
We have October 13, 1888 is basically the starting point of the Whitechapel murders of Jack the Ripper.
Okay.
And that's the sequence in that autumn of 1888 where you get the canonical five.
Right.
Now, if we have this entity which is tied to, say, a stone in the London Bridge building, it would then make sense that this entity, being what it is, ties back into, say, a 1788 and then a 1688 every 100-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to do some digging back into the historical record, this could tie all the way back to, say, the Black Plague.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be the prelude to set all of this up and the evils of the Black Death, right, wasn't necessarily just in where my head is going with this. I'm trying to tie it all in. Lips will only go so fast. It was a supernatural entity that started that plague as part of some ritualistic sacrifice for whatever reason. And you could have it start there for some unknown, as of yet, purpose that's kind of the evolving mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And then across every 100 years in the 1888s, for every century, you land on the Jack the Ripper killings. And then London Bridge gets moved in, what, 1970, mm-hmm. John?
So it was moved in the late 1960s. It was finished by 1971.
So then what you've got is this building up of tension somehow going into 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1988, you had the transition of the Reagan administration over to the election, right? There's a lot of height with the Cold War and the Soviet Union, and I don't know if that could play in with this.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now. I was looking up. I was going on your same train of thought of, okay, 100 years, we'd have to be in like 1988, what was going on? I just read an article that said the 1980s was like the height of the serial killer.
Ooh.
Like they had the most serial killers, and then that's when Jeffrey Dahmer was running loose.
Jeffrey Dahmer, okay. And in the 70s, you had Ted Bundy.
Yeah, Ted Bundy too.
I was just saying Bundy would be really, because, you know, he was all over the place.
That's true.
He could have walked across London Bridge and gotten some ideas for new hobbies.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, I'm sorry, not Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, that's the name, Ted Bundy?
Yeah.
So he was more of the suave one too, and I think you could almost imagine Jack the Ripper, oddly enough, as being kind of suave because they thought maybe he was a surgeon and he would always go after these prostitutes, and Bundy also always went after women, so there's that.
Mm-hmm. And the movie with Johnny Depp, From Hell, actually put the theory out there, capitalized on the theory that it was part of the royal family.
Right, yeah.
That was actually, and that the Ripper was indeed a rich gentleman because he was able to afford grapes.
Hmm, interesting.
That's Alan Moore, I think, that was behind that story. I mean, the graphic novel was based on. I have not seen that. Okay.
We have some form of druidic stone. Which, if we want to tie into a fantasy realm, what would be called a phylactery, going back into the Lich Dungeons and Dragons type idea.
Right.
And for whatever reason, this phylactery then possesses people every 100 years. This stone is moved to Arizona.
Uh-huh.
We've got some 100-year cycle of sacrifice going back in time and then also forward in time, potentially connecting to either the Black Death or some other mystical sacrifice thing that happened years and years and years ago.
Mm.
And then tying it into potentially the rise and the height of the serial killers in America during the late 70s going into the 80s somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what we lack is we need to figure out what would happen if Spring Hill Jack the Ripper, the spirit, whatever, what happens when it actually fulfills the ritual and it doesn't get cut short? What's the bad guy's goal?
Let me chime in just a little bit. 2 weeks ago, we had an episode with a pastor, a reverend, that him and his wife saw this weird floating object that they thought was like a, it was in Kansas or something.
Crawfordsville, Indiana, 1891.
Yes, the Crawfordsville, Indiana, that's 1891.
Yeah.
Now, this Jack the Ripper guy is coming back to America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So what if Jack the Ripper is originally from America, goes there, crosses the bridge, gets possessed, does those crimes or whatever, then comes back for whatever reason, and it's a family curse. So now this would explain why, you know, he's a rich family, it's a family curse, and they have to be tied to this stone for some reason.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, what happens when the ritual gets complete, though, too? Because, like, what he's doing these, that was kind of Griff's idea, is he's doing these killings, right, for a reason. What happens, like, he only kills five, right? So, like, what happens if, let's just say the number is seven, what happens if he gets to the sixth victim or the seventh victim or whatever?
Yeah, but my thought was, when I said incomplete, was that the fourth victim wasn't mutilated like that horrible, the fifth victim, as I recall. It was, you know, he had the entire thing set up, and she was, her, you know, entrails were draped all over the place very, very carefully. So that, you know, that in my mind, it was sort of a progression. It was all part of a ritual, but number four had been interrupted. So it's sort of like, maybe, you know, he's sort of a psychic junkie that didn't get his fix. Which might explain the explosion of serial killers in the 80s, as you know, he's getting close to that moment when Spring Hill Jack has to complete the ritual. My personal guess that just came to me as we were talking was maybe Spring Heel Jack has to do this to keep from going back to hell, or you know,
good thought.
And so that gives him some pretty high stakes.
I like that.
I think that works. Yeah, that way the world doesn't have to be like at risk where it's like, oh, the apocalypse is going to happen, because the apocalypse does get old after a while. So I like that. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
It's all a personal motivation of this malevolent entity.
Yeah, yeah.
To stay away or stay out. Okay, here we go.
Let's hear it, man.
I'm going to go back to Cain and Abel.
Okay.
Let's take Cain and Abel. And that is the malevolent entity is Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll remember back in Genesis, God curses him to be a nomad.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then he goes out east of Eden to the land of Nod, or nomadic tribes. Okay. And then he just wanders the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he is destined for hell because of the murder that he committed against his righteous brother.
Mm-hmm.
But he has found a way in order to stay that through some form of ritualistic sacrifice that he has to do at the anniversary of every murder every 100 years or so of his brother Abel.
Yeah.
And so the devil can't catch him until he slips up for some reason. That's part of the curse.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to kill this ripper or this malevolent entity. Why? Because vengeance will be taken upon them even more.
Interesting.
Mm.
So this sets up the motivation, the instigating event. You've got your villain. It's all a personal desire to, well, I can't get into heaven, and I don't want to go to hell, so the next best place is here, but unfortunately, for whatever reason, I'm beyond redemption. I can't. Or maybe he has to continue this cycle until he comes to the point of maybe there is redemption for him.
Yeah, now we're into a 3-book series.
Yeah.
the trilogy, right? And that third book is at the end of the second, the climax or whatever, is, you know, there is hope. There is a redemption story possible for this entity. And the third book is, how does he do it?
Right.
Now, who's the protagonist or the hero that's out there, the detective, trying to stop this?
To me, it might be a descendant of the bartender, the innocent person who had been possessed to push the rituals. You know, sort of, you know, expiation of the original sin of his family, because I actually weirdly used to live in Arizona, so it's funny you said Lake Havasu. So this is sort of an idea that makes it also personal for him, is, you know, I want to do something to redeem the honor, redeem the family name, you know, live an honorable life. And, you know, I could see, since Jack already had a taste of the family DNA, as it were, that maybe the Spring Hill Jack character is looking for him. And, you know, he has that sense of, wait a minute, I'm getting these urges that the horrible secret Jungian underworld thoughts that come to people sometimes. You know, it's like, oh my God, am I really like my distant uncle or my, you know, like my great-great-grandfather who died in a bar fight?
Okay, so I'm thinking my English teacher, she drilled it into me. We close all of our circles that we bring up, so I'm going to try and close some circles. So, okay, I'm going to conflate Griff's idea, just what he had there, with Will's idea that, okay, the protagonist is basically, like Griff said, but there's two of them, and it's brothers, and that's what would enact the final is brother killing brother, because it would go back to Cain and Abel, like you said.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you've got two brothers, yeah. So one is the guy who... isn't possessed by Spring-Heeled Jack the Ripper, and that they've got to break the curse by making sure that one doesn't kill the other. And so, okay, closing the circle of London Bridge, though, because we had that in there, and the Enchanted Stone, maybe let's just say somehow, for whatever crazy stupid reason... Oh, you got it, William? You got an idea?
The stone is the object which Cain killed Abel with.
Yes, that's exactly right. See, all great minds think alike. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
No, I hadn't even got there. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I was thinking too. So yeah, so that's how we get London Bridge. And then this one's not real important, but just because a few of our viewers or listeners might have scratched their head when we talked about Crawfordsville Monster. William, was your idea there that weird thing they saw flying through the sky in 1891 was the evil spirit coming to America, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Quetzalcoatl, right?
Well, it looks like Quetzalcoatl. You're exactly right. The Crawfordsville monster, but it kind of looked like it. Not exactly, but yeah, sort of.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, no, I'm...
So that particular episode that we're referring to aired February 14th, Tuesday. The story element that we pulled that from was basically a reverend and his wife had gone out to get some water or something, and... There was this kind of, it was like dusk or twilight or something. It was, you know, kind of dark. And then they had this weird experience with something that looked like a giant flying thing that was too low. And it was a lot of wind and had a glowing red eye. So it kind of just reminded me of this demon floating around. And it happened to be 1881 or 1889. It was 1880s.
1891.
1891. Yeah. So that would be about the time that this Ripper character would be coming back from London after all of that, if we were to play with that.
I think we did it. Do we need to recap it for our listeners, or do you think we got it?
Why don't you recap it?
Okay. This was the story we basically created.
Oh, wait. Good. Just hold on. Before you start, does anybody have a title for it?
Go for it, Griff.
No, I was just wondering. It just seemed like, well, something about Bridge, right? Bridge to Nowhere is too obvious. So I was thinking maybe Bridge from Nowhere,
or Bridge of the Damned.
Ooh, yeah. Anyway, that I just didn't know if a title that left out to anybody.
Clearly, you could hit like Demon Stone or something of that nature. Demonic Foundations. If the stone was part of the foundation of the bridge.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, untrustworthy foundation. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. But go ahead. I want to hear your summation.
Murder be stoned. All right, so John, give us a recap.
Okay, recap. Cain kills Abel with a stone. Somehow the stone eventually gets put into the London Bridge many years later. Cain's evil spirit is Spring-Heeled Jack and Jack the Ripper, which possesses the guy who is thought to be Jack the Ripper in 1888. He comes to America. The evil spirit follows him. He dies there. Then 100 years later, around the 1980s, the cycle begins again with all these different serial killers across the U.S. And we've got two brothers that are in the middle of this conflict, and they have to break the curse by making sure that one brother doesn't succumb to his possession or whatever to kill the other brother. And that's what will... in the curse, and maybe they blow up London Bridge or something too. You never know.
Big action scene.
Yeah.
I'm sold. I'd buy it.
I think you should write it. I don't have time, and William doesn't have time, and somebody needs to write it.
There are 15 novels with my name on them in the back of my head. Yeah. So I can make that number 16, but I don't want you guys to hold your breath.
Fair enough. Okay, so we are out of time. We've got Roy Griffiths, a.k.a. Griff, on the phone, author of, go for it, Griff.
The Thing from HR, the first book in my Cthulhu Amalgamated series.
And that's Lovecraft meets Laugh.
Indeed.
You know, when I first saw that, I was just floored, because I'm a big Lovecraft fan. I love the Cthulhu mythos and everything. And then when I saw the cover and everything of that book, The Thing from HR, my head instantly went to, I work in corporate America for quite some time, and Yeah. It just, it all clicked for me. I could just totally see a lot of those Lovecraftian monsters standing around the water cooler, sipping on, you know, tea or coffee or whatever, chatting about, you know, upper management, kind of in the office type environment. And just, oh, it would be hilarious. So yeah, we'll talk more about that in the next episode as to where you got that particular idea. But for now, Griff, give us your socials for our listeners.
You can find me website under my name, Roy M. Griffiths.com. I'm also on Facebook as Roy M. Griffiths Storyteller. Twitter, I believe, is Storyteller_Roy. Those will probably get it.
Excellent. All right, folks. Roy Griffiths on the phone, a.k.a. Roy, author of The Thing from HR. Thank you for being on the show here, Roy.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, fellas. I enjoyed it, and it was nice sitting here chatting with you guys.
Excellent. We'll have you on tomorrow's episode for the author interview, and then also on Thursday, we will do another Plot Pit Brain Hash session. That'll be fun. William Atkinson here with
John LeMay.
And Plot Pit is a show that we hope will inspire and uplift you, forging fiction from fact and folklore. You can catch us on Twitter, also YouTube. We'll be pushing content out there shortly, and more to come, but a live stream session on Twitch is in the works. Again, thank you for your time today, Griff.
Man, it was a pleasure.
And we'll catch you in the next episode.